You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer. Today I'm chatting with Alicia Conlon Hurd, who is joining me from Melbourne, Australia. And we're going to talk about a topic that I don't think we've covered very much on the show. It's a topic, well, let's see. Back in 2014, I think it was, there was this guy who you may or may not have heard of named Russell Brunson, who launched this company called ClickFunnels. And for most of us here in the marketing space, that's the first time that any of us ever heard this word funnels. And it became a huge buzzword. And a lot of marketers talk about this all the time. Businesses don't tend to talk about this as much as we marketers talk about it. Well, we're going to get to the bottom of what exactly a funnel is. And we're also going to share why funnels actually existed well before 2014 and what they might have looked like back then. I'm going to hand this over to Alicia because she is the expert in funnels, running her business, Persuasion Experience, which we'll talk a little bit about as well. Alicia, welcome.
Hey, David. It's really good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Indeed. Okay. I was a little all over the place there, but I think there's a bunch of different things we probably should talk about. The very first one is, what the heck is a funnel?
Yeah, good question. And it's good to start at because a lot of people think that a funnel is optional. So sometimes when I chat with people, they're like, oh, do I really need a funnel? And it's like, well, actually, you have one whether you realize it or not, because all a funnel is the touch points that somebody goes through when they're interacting with your business. That's just the journey that they go on. And so it's not optional. It's happening whether you want it to or not. It's just up to you whether you're going to control the narrative and the touch points, because every single touch point can be a leak. And these little leaks can sink these big ships. And so for companies that aren't focusing on their funnel, and we can sort of get into traditional versus how we think about funnels, and that, because Russell Brunson is the granddaddy papa OG of funnels. And a lot of people think of funnels in that internet marketer way where it's a very curated experience. But really a funnel is every single touch point somebody will have with your company. And it can be looked after and increased for conversions to make the most out of your traffic.
I love the fact that you're talking about every single touch point that they can have with your company. Mm-hmm. Before I hit record, we were actually, you know, commenting on the fact that so many think about funnels being simply the lead generation process. Let's go out there in the general public and try to get people interested in what we have to offer them and then capture their information and follow up with them until they buy. And that's the funnel. And that's just a small portion of it based on the way you've described it.
Exactly. That's just the acquisition phase for the most part. So really you want to chunk down your whole buyer's journey, but you even actually want to map out the buyer's journey before somebody interacts with you. So what we do is we map out Eugene Schwartz's 5 different levels of awareness, because people are going on that buyer's journey, whether you put content and you position yourself as an expert all the way out there or not. So basically, a lot of people think that when they get a lead or when they make the sale, that's when it ends. But if you start to reframe your thinking and you think, no, my funnel is every single touch point, that means the emails that your sales team send out, that's the scripting of your onboarding, that's the scripting of your demo, that's the talk trigger that you send out after to delight them and to get them talking about your product and getting word of mouth spreading. That's what happens 1 month in, 3 months in, 9 months in. It's actually a whole journey, and it's not a linear line. It's more of like a circle or lots of circles. And it's an ongoing journey that you should be mapping out forever, because so many people put so much effort into getting the lead, getting the sale. And then what happens afterwards? How do you make more money from that lead or sale? How do you delight them? How do you get them to turn into volunteer marketers? And for every person you bring, how do they bring in 3 more? And there's a lot of growth levers that people don't focus on further in that funnel. They're very obsessed with traffic and spending more. But what if you could convert more of that traffic without spending a cent more on it? Yeah. Or if you want to scale it, you can. And that's what we really focus on.
How would you like to become part of the More Perfect Marketing family? You can when you join our free online community, More Perfect Marketers. Inside, you'll get access to our collection of marketing cheat sheets to help you streamline your business growth, as well as the videos from David's Niche Challenge, which will teach you the counterintuitive approach to selling more by focusing on a narrower audience. To join for free, please visit mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. Now, back to the show.
Okay, you dropped a name in there a moment ago, Eugene Schwartz, and the levels of awareness. And so for folks who don't know who that was, he's one of these, well, for all of us really nerdy people in the marketing world. By the way, I was talking to a traditional Madison Avenue advertising guy the other day, and I mentioned Eugene Schwartz. He had no idea who I was talking about. So this is a direct response God in our world, yes. Right? And yes. He wrote several books, one of which was something called Breakthrough Advertising, where he talks about the levels of awareness. Do you want to sort of describe that in a little bit more detail so folks can understand what you're referring to?
Yeah, basically, when somebody has a problem, there's an awareness scale. So it goes all the way from unaware to most aware. Unaware is like, I don't even know I have the problem. I have no idea it exists. That's a very hard market to go after. And the reason why understanding this journey is important is because you need to enter the conversation that your market is having at the right time. So a lot of people forget that in their marketing, there's a difference between what somebody wants to hear and what they need to hear. And so what they start doing is they have this curse of knowledge and they're like, oh, listen to this. It's so exciting, because they've forgotten what it's like to have no idea what it is that their product or service does. And so they have this curse of knowledge. They know way more about the different universe of options, and they are actually trying to enter the wrong conversation. So when you are using, it's just easy, just Google Eugene Schwartz's 5 levels of awareness. And then you can think, okay, where are these people? What sort of things are they searching? What sort of things are they saying? Are they unaware? Do they even know the problem exists? Are they solution aware? Are they problem aware? Are they most aware? Because that does actually dictate the conversation you're entering and the type of copy that you write for them as well.
So there's this added piece to what you're doing with funnels, because you were talking about sort of the initial phase of the relationship as being the acquisition part of the funnel. But what you've just talked about in terms of awareness also plays into where the relationship goes after that first purchase or after that first interaction with a business, right?
Well, I think Eugene Schwartz's is definitely up until the sale. So that's the whole decision process that a lead is going through, and they go through it whether you want them to or not. So a lot of people want to cherry pick sales or leads at the most aware end, but mm-hmm. people are going on this journey whether you help them or not. So a good analogy to think of is, imagine you have a retail store and you're standing at the cash register and you don't move from the cash register. You just take the money. That's the most aware. But there's all of these people touching jeans, trying on beanies in your store, feeling fabric. And if you just took a couple of steps away from the cash register and went and spoke to them and answered a couple of questions, or you provided some value, you would get actually a much bigger pool of customers coming to the cash register because you have helped them to move down that buyer's journey.
I would argue, though, that after somebody makes a purchase, maybe it's how do they care for that piece of clothing or apparel that they've now there's a new exactly. awareness level that they have, and therefore you can then sell them subsequent products.
Yes. And so the way that we use it, Eugene Schwartz, is very much about that top of funnel, mm-hmm. bringing them into it. And then that's the acquisition phase. So what happens after acquisition can be activation. So this is where we like to chunk down the funnel experience. Acquisition is their lead journey with you. Activation is the sales journey with you and every touch point you map out. And so what a lot of companies do is they leave it to see how the salesperson feels on the day. So it might be like there's no script, or the salesperson can send out any random email that they feel like, which might have any random content in it. There's not a beautiful proposal. There's no sales enablement in that phase. Mm-hmm. And that's all of your leaky buckets there. Then after activation, it's like, okay, you've got the sale. Now this is where your revenue comes in. So how can you upsell? How can you cross-sell? Where are the other opportunities? What other problems can you solve? And what are the next logical steps? Because the best way, like a lot of people think they need to get more leads. It's often if you changed your pricing in that activation phase, or if you changed what the next steps are, what your upsells are and what your cross-sells are in that revenue phase as well, that's actually how you can generate a lot more. Like you can do a lot more with a lot less, basically, in your funnel. And then there's retention. So have you mapped out how you retain people? Have you mapped out what happens in the very first call? What happens for a lot of companies is they spend a lot of money, especially professional B2B services, and then they have that post-purchase dissonance. They're like, oh my gosh, I've just dropped 20K, 50K, 100K, whatever it is. And the salesperson is a real smooth talker. And then what happens is when you talk to the onboarding specialists, if they're not as confident or as much of a smooth talker, you start to lose a bit of disconnect. So actually your retention starts in that onboarding from sales to fulfillment team. And a lot of people don't focus on that critical step, which is a huge leak because then you don't retain your client for as long. And so you can start to see where all of these touch points can be mapped out and optimized to find more revenue in that whole journey, not just the top of funnel marketing journey.
So when we first started talking about this, I was thinking, like most marketers do, that the funnel is really all the things that you automate, that you have, you know, sort of working on your behalf to support your business. And, you know, I'm being a little glib in saying that I thought, because in fact, I teach this, but there is so much non-automated stuff that you've just talked about that I think it's important to sort of circle back to the types of systems and processes that a business has the opportunity to standardize. And you've pointed out a few of them, but I wanted to make sure that they weren't hidden too much in what you just described. Can you maybe pull out a couple of those sorts of situations and how a business can look at the way that people are interacting or the way and really systematize some of that?
Yeah. So it's just about controlling and optimizing the narrative. So a lot of it, as you said, funnels can be automated, and that is the best part of it. So even in your CRM, you can tag certain things so certain automations go out and it removes that human error. But in terms of the more manual things, if we deep dive into a few like cool tactics of what you could do, one is a really cool concept called a talk trigger. So when somebody comes on board, and there's a book called Talk Trigger, if you want to Google it. When somebody is onboarding, how can you do something, send something, give something that's going to get them talking about what you've done? For example, in persuasion experience, we're very obsessed with infomercials. And so probably the most classic infomercial thing is, but wait, there's more. If you buy today, we'll throw in these steak knives. So we have got these handcrafted knives, kitchen knives, as like an ode to this, inscribed with PX, something that people will use. And then we've created a stick letter. So we send this out, or we're going to start sending this out to our clients where we have this gift. We have this stick letter, and what sort of agency is sending out that? That is a talk trigger. People are like, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe what my agency sent me, a knife in the mail. Yeah. And this is what the letter said. And so that's one way.
And by the way, you're using some industry nomenclature here. So explain what a stick letter is, just for folks who don't know.
Yeah, basically, this sounds stupid. It makes people stick. It helps with retention. It helps to wow them. It's, you know, there's always an awkward gap between closing the sale and onboarding the customer and getting their quick wins. Mm-hmm. So what we do, we have that. We've mapped out every day for the first, every day to every week for like the first 90 days. So we do that. And then we make sure that we get a quick win. So like, okay, in the first week, how do we get this client a quick win so they feel good about working with us and their decision to work with us? And so these are some of the non-automated things that still need to be like able to be replicated and scalable, and they are, but they are setting you above your competition. So a lot of people are just happy to sort of coast. A lot of businesses just coast, just be a little bit better than your competition, and that's it. But that doesn't stand out from the noise. So how do you build this competitive force field around your company? It's all of these little things that start to add up. It's these one percenters, sometimes they're 1,000 percenters that start to add up in building a very strong company.
All right, I love that, and I love the example of like a gifting program as a way to build some touch point into a funnel, right? That's not something that most businesses do. And so the fact that, you know, you're doing that and you're teaching clients how to do that and implement that systematically can, I don't think it's 1%. It's closer to that 1,001%. But it's absolutely giving, them a true edge. And I think I'm curious, you mentioned 90 days. What's significant around that time period in from your perspective?
For us, it depends on what is the customer journey. So we are a project-based agency, not a traffic-based agency. Mm-hmm. So a traffic-based agency has retainers. We do big projects, and then sometimes there's consulting work on the back end. Just keep using persuasion experience as an example, because that we are of a pretty dialed-in machine for 8 months. Every time we talk to a client, we keep track of the problems they say they have. We check in with them. Hey, what problems are you having? We keep writing a list. We give every client a free 1 hour strategy session towards the ends of their project to map out more parts of their funnel. Either they get extreme value and they're like, wow, that's awesome, and they'll obviously refer us on, or they want to keep us on for more work. So really the way to like frame it is a business just solves problems. That's mm-hmm. it. The bigger the problem, the more you get paid. And so what you should be doing with your core offering is figuring out what problems people want solved, like, and that's what they're asking for. But people have more problems than what they're aware of. And so all you should be doing is thinking and like putting the lens on is what problems does somebody need solved and how can I solve them the best? And that's literally all we think about is our target market, what will help them, what problems do they have, and then crafting something that is going to help them to solve those problems.
So you've worked in a whole bunch of different industries, and I was visiting your website, and you mentioned a few of them, which are very, very diverse. I'm curious if you can sort of give a couple of really different examples of the types of experiences that one business might offer in their funnel versus another.
Yeah. So I'll caveat it with, because this is important for everybody to know, what are the foundations of all of this? Because what a lot of people do is they start to build a house on sand. Yeah. And then they start putting sticky tape and band-aids all over this house because they haven't built the proper foundation. And so when we come in, what we often see is people have Frankensteined these CRO monstrosities because they've tried to plug all these things in, and the CEO wants this copy and this person wants this on the page. And then they have this abomination where it just doesn't work. And so if everybody just went back and figured out target market, positioning, message, and offer, that will help with everything. Marketing is just inputs and outputs. Garbage in, garbage out. Most people have, if they even have one, extremely basic target market avatars. They've never surveyed them, and you've got to ask them good questions. Higher up execs couldn't even name 30, 50, 100 clients personally. They are not target market obsessed. And so that's the very first thing that you need to do, because that feeds into everything. That's your number one input, is your target market. So now I'll answer your question, because everybody had to listen to me rant on that for a minute.
And by the way, thank you for saying all of that. This is where I like wag my finger at a lot of marketers who'd never, ever consider what you just talked about in terms of foundational elements. So I really do appreciate that. Everybody go back and listen to that, like, you know, hit the go back 30 seconds like twice so that you can hear Alicia say that again. Okay, yes, now you can proceed.
Positioning, message, offer. And now I can talk about some examples in different industries. And for the most part, we work with a lot of clients on their lead generation. Like the other projects are very, very big. So some clients, we work on something called a Dream 100 campaign. This was a big fintech company, billion-dollar brand, and they needed to draw in what we were calling whales. And they're hard to start a conversation with. I think a lot of B2B services struggle with this. Like, cold email doesn't cut it. These people don't want your cold email. It's boring. It's lame. They don't want it. And they have a lot of money and not a lot of time. So it's, and then we understand the target market. We research them in depth. Ways that you can understand the target market: number one, surveys and phone calls and talking to them in interviews. It's easy if you incentivize it. Next is just go to where they're hanging out online. Read Reddit. Read, like, type, like, whatever you do, forum. It's a gold mine. Read Whirlpool, like Yahoo, whatever forum is is relevant to your audience, go to YouTube videos. Act like your target market trying to solve the problem. So back to this Dream 100 campaign, we figured out, okay, how can we get in front of them? That isn't, you can't use ads. They're a small pool of people. So how can we do that? And we actually thought of direct mail. And so, because then you can be very targeted, you can stand out from the noise. And then we actually created a direct mail funnel. Every touch point, what does the packaging look like? What's in the packaging? What's the letter? All of these different things. We were inviting them to a special club, an exclusive club. I can't talk too much about it because it hasn't launched yet, but that's an example of how you can do it. A lot of the time, people shouldn't even be focusing further in the funnel yet because they haven't got acquisition right. There's not a lot of point focusing on your activation and all of these other things until you've got your predictable, scalable lead gen machine going on, or your sales machine. A lot of people don't have that. And that's why we start with a lot of people there. And the very first thing we do is figure out, once we've got all these points, the offer and how are you going to stand out from the noise? And so what we need to figure out is, what is that dream outcome of your target market? What is your dream outcome? And how do you provide that to them quickly and easily with not much effort from them? And there's a great book by Alex Hormozi, $100 Million Offers, that has a little value stack in it. And then all you're doing is solving problems. That's what you do. You want to show people that you're solving problems. And the biggest tip I can give to lead gen companies especially is that don't just be like, oh, get a free quote. Talk to us. Because that's, no one cares. That is boring. And that sounds like I'm going to be harassed by a salesperson if I give you my information. Think about, how can you provide immense value on that call, whether they go ahead with you or not? And you are probably already doing it, but it's a DAR to you. It's like a DAR thing. You don't realize how valuable it is. So really think about all of the value you give and make sure you're telling them. And that's the best way that you will improve your conversion rate very quickly on that acquisition, is presenting a much stronger offer, because people are just looking at your marketing thinking, so what, who cares, what's in it for me? And if you're not answering that what's in it for me, and you have me marketing, as in you're talking about your company, no one cares. We're wired to not care. We're wired to care about ourselves and what we're going to get out of it.
I love so many things that I want to have people again rewind and listen to, but I want to hear about the juxtaposition, the other. So you did the fintech model. There was one that was, I imagine, very, very different from that. Unless I missed it, I want to hear another example.
Yeah, well, there's like lots of examples. Yep. Home builders, emergency plumbers, to porn addiction counselors and Brazilian butt lift doctors, everything. But it's the same formula of figuring out what does the target market want. So for example, when we work with our SaaS clients, a lot of them forget that their software can be ripped off. And so, and like, they care because they put a lot of time and effort into it, but they never talk about the transformation. They never connect the chain of logic between the feature, the benefit, and what's in it for me. Why should I care? Mm-hmm. So for any SaaS client, any SaaS listeners, go and read your copy. And I bet a lot of it is just feature based, and you probably don't have a very clear message hierarchy and no clarity. And so what we try to figure out with our SaaS clients, because everybody just copies everyone. Go and Google whatever, everyone copies everyone. Mm-hmm. We worked with a client called Dabble, and they're the number one fiction cloud-based writing software. Cool. But we surveyed their audience. Oh, I always say audience like I'm on a game show. We surveyed their customers. Mm-hmm. And what did their customers actually care about, in their words? What was their dream outcome? They wanted to finally finish the book that they had in their brain, or they'd started writing in Google Docs, and become a published author. Yeah. So all the number one cloud-based writing software for fiction writers, that's just a vehicle to get into the end desired state. So we figured out who were their true competitive alternatives. It wasn't really other softwares. It was inertia and doing nothing. So we had to motivate over inertia and doing nothing. But you can see that reframe of, this, and this is what we do. It's like, this is your positioning and this is your offer. Instead of being, oh, we're a cloud-based software. Okay, cool. That's nice. The number one fiction writing place. Oh, we're going to help you. We give you the tools to finally finish your book. Imagine if you could finally finish your book and we'll show you how to get published. And so they had all of these awesome resources in the back end that they weren't talking about. So we structured that to be more of a membership, and hey, we've got a free training on how to get published. And this is all part of joining Dabble. And so we started to build a competitive force field for the offer. So we weren't just competing on software anymore. We were competing on dream outcome.
There is so much to be said for this idea around positioning. And I think you just gave the perfect example of how so many businesses are missing out on a better version of themselves simply by thinking too narrowly or thinking too literally about what they deliver.
Yes, exactly. So starting at the top, this is a very quick how to do positioning, your true competitive alternatives. You have the curse of knowledge, who you think are your competitors because you just know about the universe of all of these options is not who your target market's thinking about. Go back to your Eugene Schwartz's five levels, the five stages of awareness. If they're not at most aware, they're not actually probably looking at competitors. Typically, they're doing an old school way. The intern's doing it. Everything's in paper and pen. Everything's in email threads. Everything's on phone calls, whatever it is. They're probably doing an old school, traditional way of looking after that. So once you do that, you can start to map out what only you have versus those true competitive alternatives. Then you can connect that and say, what's the benefits and how does it make your life better? But the one thing pretty much everyone misses is the third party irrefutable proof to prove it. So you can't go around saying, hey, we're the best. Trust us. It's like, no. How do you prove that you're the best? With proof. Yeah, obviously. So screenshots, testimonials, whatever it is. And then you figure out what is your market category so that you can actually be contextualizing all this information. For example, if you make a tractor and you tell people it's a car, they're going to expect a certain set of features. And so they're comparing what you've created to a certain baseline of market category. And so if you're trying to put a tractor into the car market, it's not going to make sense to people. So it's really important to figure out that market category so that people can be contextualizing your differences correctly.
So I want to get back to this proof thing, because you do this really, really well on your website in a way that is not intuitive to most people, right? So most businesses will think, well, I need a bunch of testimonials on my website. And You don't have testimonials front and center, although I imagine that they're here somewhere in your world. But what you do have is your experience in some very impressive stats. And then you have a list of businesses that are recognizable names that you've worked with, right? That's incredible proof.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Proof doesn't have to be testimonials. They're very strong and especially very credible ones. That website is not our final website. What do they say? We're like the shoemaker whose kids have crappy shoes. We're too busy in the last 8 months bringing everybody's stuff to life. So that's just what we've chucked up so people can understand what we do. But to go back to your point, yeah, that's exactly right. Proof, you just think about different ways that you can prove something. So it can be trust seals. It can be Trustpilot, Google reviews. It can be videos. It can be screenshots, for example, if you help to get good results in Google Ads. You would want to show a screenshot of that. The more native and the more organic it looks, awesome. Screenshot text messages, emails. One thing that I encourage all of our clients to do, especially if they have Slack or they can do it in Drive, but keep a wins channel. So every time client gives you feedback, you get a win, whatever it is. One, it's great for company morale, and it's good for the sales team to keep having buy-in into what you're doing. But two, now you have this huge pool of wins that you can use in your marketing. You can use it in your ads. You can use it on your page. You can use it in your VSLs, your emails, whatever it is. And so, yeah, people think of proof as pretty linear, but there's lots of different ways that you can prove what you're trying to say.
So we're just about out of time, and I want to make sure that for folks who are interested in learning more about the work that you do, can you talk a little bit about who you tend to serve or who you enjoy serving the most in the work that you're doing, and then we should let them know how they can get in touch with you as well.
I know. Or maybe I don't and they have to work for it. So I know everyone that comes and talks to me really wanted to. So we typically work with companies that have somewhat proof of concept. It's working, it's selling. We don't usually work too much at entry level. Hey, we want to test this out, unless people are really like, I'm happy for this to be a test and I want to pay you to do it because I know it'll have its best chance at life. And what we're trying to do is help people to scale, to find new pools of customers and to get more leads and conversions. Usually they have extremely ambitious growth goals, year on year growth goals. I think the most ambitious one we've worked with is a 1400% increase in MQLs. And we were like, well, let's give it a crack. Let's try. Yes. But most people have hit they've hit a ceiling in what they can achieve. And a lot of this resonates within. They're like, yeah, we don't know our target market enough. We're not obsessed enough. Our positioning isn't right. Your positioning should be revisited every 6 months. We don't have the strongest offer. Competitors keep entering the market. The market's different to 6 months, 12 months, 3 years ago when we started. And we do need this help. So we are really big on education, enablement, and giving the capabilities internally. We don't want to be, a lot of agencies want to be the gatekeeper of information. So some clients come on board with us for a big, we call them the big boy funnels. We do everything for you. We do all the strategy, all the research, all the copy, all the design, all the build. But a lot of companies, they have marketing teams. They just need some education, enablement, and to boost the capabilities internally. And that's where we come in and we do the strategy and the research. And then we do workshops with the team to download our brain into theirs, because we can't just do a funnel once and set it up and send them on their way. We want to set them up for success ongoing. And marketing isn't a one shot, one kill. You have to think in a way where you're constantly iterating and optimizing and getting it right. Not many marketers launch something into the world, the universe, and then it is high converting straight away. That's just not the reality of the world we live in. Marketing is very humbling. So that's a big thing that we try to do with our clients. We call it Mary Poppinsing. Like, we come in, we help the kids, and then once everybody's good, we can get on our umbrellas and leave basically. So if any of that sounds like you, typically our clients have at least, it's a 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 LTV, because the economics stack up. Anything smaller can be a little bit harder, but we do CRO audits for clients as well. Sometimes they're like, hey, like, especially e-commerce stores, can you just tell me how to make more money? So e-commerce, SaaS, lead gen, anyone who has a conversion problem and any of that resonated, that is who we help.
And you can tell Alicia's been hanging around the marketing club a little bit too much, because that was, let's see, marketing qualified lead, lifetime value, and there was a third one that you threw in. Oh, conversion rate optimization. So there's a bit of jargon in there, but for you business owners out there who don't live in our world, that's what those things meant. And I guess the best place to have them visit is the Cobbler's Children website.
Yes,
version 0.1.
And it depends when this launches. Our new one is in the works. So the website, my LinkedIn, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So you can find me on all of the socials under my name, Alicia Conlon Hurd. I'm sure they'll be in the show notes. YouTube, I give out, well, and so does my co-founder. We give out a lot of information for free. Not everyone can afford to work with us. Our mission is that we genuinely feel like, and we know that a lot of businesses with amazing products and services that help people die, go out of business because they don't know marketing and they don't know sales. And that is our overarching mission. So we have a lot of free content on our LinkedIn and on our YouTube. And so if that's more for you, go there. If you're ready to have me totally obliterate unfiltered everything you're doing wrong in your funnel and on your landing pages, then book in a call and you'll speak directly with me.
Excellent. Well, we will leave that link as well to some of the other social links too, but that's persuasionexperience.com. Which, yes, by the way, is a great looking site, even if you're not happy with it. We all have cobbler's children syndrome in our businesses, no matter what we do. So, it's great. Don't worry. Anyway, Alicia Conlon Hurd, thank you so very, very much for hanging out. I really appreciate the insights that you've shared. And I do encourage our listeners to go back and listen to some of those nuggets, because there was some really, really smart stuff in there that you shared.
Thank you, David. It was really fun.
Indeed. Folks, this has been another episode of More Perfect Marketing. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate your time, and I hope to see you back here on another episode. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.